that they were vector-based. So with that, I think what I'd like to do, get out of the way of the people who really had the history to sort of leave us. We have, and so John Ellenby, can you introduce yourself? And I think we have a mic that's here to catch the sound.
So I should talk to the mic? It's day of the light, I can't say. Well, actually, I really shouldn't be here because I wasn't here for his birthday. I'll be out there. The Alto was born in 73 and I joined Xerox in 74. And I guess my credentials are that I'm kind of the stepfather of the Alto because I took over and did the Alto 2, which is the one that's been produced in fairly high volume. But when I arrived in Xerox, I was kind of marked as a manager immediately because I introduced myself to one of the secretaries and said, I've got to, you know, you're going to be looking after me. He said, no, I'm leaving. I said, well, why is that? Well, this Jeff keeps on parking his bicycle against my cubicle, and I just can't stand it. So I said, well, I'll go talk with him about that, which I did, and he stopped doing that, so she stayed, and everybody said, hey, this guy's a manager. So we were very pleased about that. Anyway, when I arrived, there were about five Altos that were...
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill.
Is this mic on?
Does this amplify,
no.
or is this just recording?
It's
just
recording.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Just
I'll speak up.
Is this mic gone at all? Does it go anywhere?
It only goes to the recording.
I'll speak up. When I arrived at Xerox, there were five Altos. Mike Oldfield, who was the tech. I think it was Mike.
Overton.
Overton. That's right, Mike Overton. Was wringing his hands and trying to keep them going. They had some problems because... the memory cards were, there was no error correction, and there were a few other problems, including a power supply problem, which still be fixed when we did the Alto 2. And Jerry, you know, after this experience that I could actually solve problems with retaining secretaries, said, well, you know, could you look after building the other 25 that were asking SDS, the computer company that Xerox had bought for $1 billion. We were asking SDS to build them in their Western Technology Center in El Segundo. And there's a lot of problems because they say they can't build them. So go see them. I had come from Ferranti Limited and then the university. I had two full-time jobs before I arrived. One was a computer science teacher at Edinburgh University, and the other one was designing the Argus 700. And the Argus 700, if any of you know about computer history, you should know that it's probably one of the world's great multiprocessors. I was a mechanical marvel. And so I thought, well, maybe there's some mechanical problems here and we'll sort those out. But the big deal was trying to get SDS to build these 25 machines. And it turned out they hated Park. SDS actually hated Park, and for good reason. Stuck it to the boss. The Max, which was up on the screen as the one of the machines that Park had built, was actually a knockoff of the PDP-10. And the reason that Park went ahead and built his PDP-10 and called it Max, after Max Pileski, who was the founder of SDS, in other words, to really stick it to him, instead of buying something from SDS, Park wanted to build a PDP-10. The PDP-10 was not allowed to be bought because we owned SDS, and that was a competitor of digital equipment. So,
Xerox.
And so Max, by the way, is the grandfather of the Alto, because we used all the Max cards. Chuck went ahead and built the Alto out of the Max cards. And so what
Chuck Thacker.
Chuck Thacker, I'm sorry. Chuck Thacker built the Alto 1 using the same form factor as those cards, and also use the same memory structure out of the Max. And while the memory and the Max work fine because we pay a lot of money to have screen parts, and those of you who remember semiconductors in the early days will know that solid-state memories were a little bit flaky. When we started to build Altos in significant quantities, it was quite a problem. So I not only got SDS to build these machines by being nice to them, and saying, hey, you know, Max Pileski is a great guy, you know, I mean, SDS is a tremendous company. And of course, in the middle of this, Xerox went and tuned the whole computer division, and I had to sort of cling on to the guys who were building Altos. and it was a pretty exciting time to do the Alto 2. I had the spec for the Alto 2, but basically the Alto 2 was a re-engineering of the Alto 1 so we could make them in volume. We had lots of excitement building them, and we had lots of excitement getting them out to customers all over Xerox. Some of them were on serialized numbers that we sent to various people to get faders done. And there were quite an amazing set of things that happened. But the most amazing thing that happened with the Alto was what exactly Butler was forecasting should happen, and that is that people like Charles here, and Peter, and Dave, I think, with Smalltalk later, but actually it came along as a student very early on. It was the fact that it was software that made the difference. This machine is all about software. Now, what really impressed me about the Alto when I first looked at it was it's a software machine. You know, I came from the Arista 700, which was all distributed multiprocessors, actually processors all over the world because we did airline systems and banking systems, and so it was a distributed system, right? Very familiar to Bill English back there, because distributed versus shared was one of the big deals. They also did everything with a microprocessor, with a lot of microcode, and did an incredibly good job. But it was a software-driven machine. The microcode, the software, and of course WYSIWYG, Smalltalk, and Lisp, and all these other things that happened were extraordinary. The other great thing about the Alto, of course, is connectivity. The fact that we had a lot of them. I was hoping that we'd have John Sharp here, not only because he did the first worm, but actually he's the first VC that did the first worm. So we say, hey, you know, all VCs are say a weird thing like that. But the worm was an extraordinary thing, because that was another example of connecting all these machines together and having them act in unison. Because what he did was to shove packets backwards and forward at night for his thesis. So the other big thing about the Alto, of course, was that it had to have printers. And because WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get, and here is Mr. What you see is what you get, in a very, very big sense, this is Bravo here, had to have a printer that could print to that quality. And so the laser printers that Gary Starkweiler did, is he coming? He's not here, I realize that. The laser printer was really the most important part, along with WYSIWYG, along with the software, along with the whole idea that many, many computers could be connected together regardless of where they were in the world. So it was a terribly exciting time. I was very grateful to be a part of it, very excited by it. If you like, I have some artifacts about the Alto 2 specs, final decisions of Xerox to can the Alto, and what sort of led up to that. And also the letter that was written to me about why they were not going to do it, which was rather interesting and nice.
It wasn't meant to be a product.
It was not meant to be a product. And big lesson that I learned way, way back in my early days with Ferranti is that you never make your prototype to look nice. The prototype should be horrible. And then management will invest in tooling. So, you know, this thing should be spread all over the floor, should be dangerous, should actually spark and probably catch fire and be a real hazard. And then management will invest in tooling. And as it was, you know, that machine, the Alto 1 looks just like the Alto 2 in so many respects. It looked complete, it looked finished. And so why not build lots of these? And of course there was no drawing package, you know, there was no attempt to make it maintainable. And so the Alto 2 did a little bit towards that, but we had in mind that we do the Alto 3, and then Butler, being the father of all this in many, many ways, had designed what we call a Wildflower, which was a single board personal computer, which was really a software-driven paradise machine, which of course is sort of now out there and is commonplace. So for all those reasons, I'm very pleased to be here. I hope I meet many of you, but I'm much more interested to hear what these guys say, because really it's software that made a machine. And of course that's how it is today.